a secret agent man. Secret agent man. Secret agent man.
It's Wednesday, 10th of July. It's 9 o'clock, and this is the Circle Day Show with Donnacha de Lung. Something that people can't possibly have missed in the news recently are the increasing revelations of police spies within radical movements. And obviously, it reached a tipping point with the range of stories in a new book that's just come out revealing them. I'm joined on the show by Eleanor Hudson, who's been involved in radical movements in the UK for many, many years and has quite a bit of experience in some of the different groups that were infiltrated by the police. Eleanor,
hi.
Do you just want to basically give people a bit of a background to what you've been involved? Because your experience in some of the radical movements goes back many, many, many years.
Yes, I first got involved in the environmentalist movement in the 1990s. Over time, I realised that capitalism was also maybe like the main threat to the environment. So I got into anarchism through that and class struggle politics generally. And I see myself as a sort of unaligned syndicalist socialist-y type at the moment.
You know, going back to some of the earliest things, you may have been slightly better known by a different name, which people might remember.
Yes, I was called Animal.
I saw that you kind of mentioned on Facebook a while back that actually you've encountered a number of the people who've since been revealed as police spies.
Yes, that's right. Actually, Jim Sutton was almost the very first person I met on the very first action that I was on. I also worked with Flash for a bit, and I knew Rod in Nottingham, but not really very well. In fact, actually, do you know what? None of us knew any of them very well, as it turned out, but I genuinely didn't know him very well.
I suppose one of the things to think about going back, because I know, for example, the experience of some of the comrades in Wales was that their Police Spy basically ruined their group by kind of sowing dissent within the group. Did you experience over the years things that kind of make more sense now when you know that who some of the people were and what they were actually really up to?
A little bit, yes. I was thinking about this earlier. There was a funny little bit of conversation that I had with Rod. He was talking about his work, which he was claiming was as a personal trainer. And I made some kind of like silly little joke at him and said, oh, Rod, you know, do you have lots of posh birds fancying you? And he got really funny about it, wouldn't answer anymore. And at the time, you know, you just kind of assume like, oh, you know, it's quite a politically correct environment. Like perhaps he's unhappy that I've been a tiny bit sexist. I mean, it's unusual for a man to be unhappy that a woman's been sexist, but it's a very, you know, it's a sort of very left-wing environment, it could happen. And then a little while later, he made an enormous point about telling me a whole bunch of anecdotes sort of supposedly from his work, and then you only realise down the line, you know, that he'd been uncomfortable because I'd been sort of probing at his cover story, and then he'd had to come up with something. And it's funny because you think about that and you think, oh, that should have been something that tipped us off that there was something wrong, but of course it isn't, because, you know, that's forgetting the thousands and thousands of other times when something similar would happen and it would be completely innocent. So there's really no way of telling who is and who isn't, I think. I've been lucky not to have experienced anything very horrible and divisive within the movements, actually, that I could put my finger on as being to do with infiltration. Except, of course, the horrible, horrible fallout and the sense of betrayal that people felt when it was exposed, and the sense of mistrust that it's caused between people. But I think from what I've personally experienced, it's been the fallout from the exposure rather than anything that the infiltrators did themselves.
As well, one of the most interesting revelations that's really only come out in the past couple of weeks is actually the revelation of police involvement in creating the MacLibel leaflet. On the other side, thinking back to some of the things that may have gotten people into trouble, some ideas that may have come that seemed a bit odd and a bit extreme, are there any that you can kind of point to that may have actually come from basically an agent provocateur side rather than necessarily a constructive suggestion?
No, the truth is that I can't. My impression of all of the infiltrators that I knew at the time was that they were sensible, competent people that were very easy to work with and easy to get along with. Which obviously they had to be in order to gain acceptance and to gain status and trust. I didn't experience actually an infiltrator being terribly disruptive, although I understand that in Wales it was very different.
Mm-hmm. One of the interesting things, because I was in Ireland during the early part of the kind of movements here, I didn't come over till 2002, and I kind of missed the early May Days. Got to experience kind of the burgeoning of that in Ireland, but was lucky enough not to be in the one where the cops went mad and beat people up because I'd just left. But one of the things that kind of we used to receive in Ireland were stories back that effectively at the time sounded a bit like conspiracy theories. There was one about May Day 2000 where one of the comrades from Dublin was over and watching when the cops effectively pulled back from the McDonald's that was attacked. That was the kind of reason why the cops moved in. And they basically, there was a group of what appeared to be animal rights protesters moving towards it, and suddenly the cops pulled back and exposed the McDonald's. And I'm just thinking that now, you know, in the context of knowing there were so many police effectively involved in the movements and hidden in the movements, that some of these stories actually seem much more credible now than they did at the time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't doubt that there are provocateurs as well. But I think that the infiltrators I came across, that the way they were operating seemed to be much more to do with simply being around and getting information, you know, rather than messing things up actively. I don't doubt that it happens, although I'm always extremely cautious about accusing anybody of something like that, because I think I think it's quite an easy way to get out of engaging with an idea or engaging with a plan, just to say, well, that's the kind of thing that an agent provocateur would do. You know, I think it's better if you have a disagreement with a tactic to discuss it at face value.
The parallels between this maybe and kind of what happened with the newspapers and the hacking scandal is how there was a lot of information gradually coming out in The Guardian, almost in the same place, not quite the same journalist. This was largely Paul Lewis's work. And it wasn't until the Stephen Lawrence revelations came out that suddenly it reached the public tipping point, and now there's talk of a public inquiry and people getting interested in it. What I find ironic in that is actually effectively most of the groups that were infiltrated had a perfect right to exist, yet the public consciousness isn't yet there to say, actually, this is a bad idea, and this is dangerous for democracy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the thing about the Stephen Lawrence campaign is that it's not only an important campaign, but it's a campaign of incredible emotional immediacy to the people involved. I mean, you're talking about a campaign that's headed by bereaved parents, for God's sake, which, you know, I mean, all credit where it's due to all the comrades that I've had over the years, but, you know, the majority of stuff that we were involved with didn't have that sort of immediacy. It wasn't that personal to us, and I think it's just I think it's right that there should be an outcry about it, because there really are some things that ought to be sacred and ought to be left alone. And, you know, anyone with human decency would think that a mother's grief is one of those things, you know. It really, you know, really, really is appalling.
And I think in one way, and what's now really starting to gain momentum, is actually the bigger thing that seems to have offended everyone is where they got the names and the fact that they were using dead children's names.
Yes, well, that's horrific. I mean, one of the people that was unfortunate enough to have had a relationship with an undercover police, you know, actually went looking for him, trying to track him down, and tracked down the parents of, you know, of not him, of the identity that he stole. Now, you know, she might have turned up on their doorstep and asked them about it. And can you imagine? You know, they have nothing to do with anything. They're just people that have lost a child. To have somebody turning up asking strange questions years later.
Just maybe looking a bit more at the future, one of the things that's going to be interesting now, we've heard all the issues of, you know, the issues of surveillance and how the state is increasingly watching what we're doing on social media coming out. But the flip side of that is actually it must be increasingly difficult to try and put together a fake identity without having the long history of social media use that actually most activists now will have.
Well, I don't know. It depends. See, it depends how closely you're looking for things. I mean, another thing that a lot of people have said is a red flag for somebody maybe being an infiltrator is if they seem to have money, but it's not clear where it comes from. And it's really easy to say that. It's really easy to say that now. But how many people would you honestly feel comfortable quizzing about their income? Do you know what I mean? And I think it's the same with the Facebook stuff. How closely, in reality, do you investigate the people around you, your comrades? You don't really, you don't, and you can't, and it's not practical to. And also, people have very good reasons often for not having a public profile. I'm kind of thinking about people that I know that have had abusive relationships and then have had to cut their social media and reinvent themselves under a different name in order to avoid being found. I mean, there's plenty of legitimate reasons why you would do it. So I don't think there's any sort of magic bullet that you can check, you know, that you can, you know, 100% check that somebody's dodgy.
What do you hope is going to come out of the fact that this is now very much in the public arena? Do you think that, you know, that we are now having, you know, probably one of the most right-wing justice secretaries in the UK talking about needing to control the police's activity in relation to this? Incredibly ironic. And obviously, she's been affected by what we were saying, the kind of moral tipping points rather than the political side of things. But, you know, what do you think might come out of this? Do you think there might be something more constructive come out of it, at least a way of engaging with what's going on?
I think the most likely thing to come out of it is that... I don't know. Do you know? It depends, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. It depends what the police's attitude to it is. When you look at something like the Fit team that follow protesters around and take photographs of them, that to me they seem like a group of police that have got a bit carried away and are acting outside of their brief, and therefore might get closed down, very much like the kind of like vice squads of the 70s or something. They were given a brief, they ran with it, and they went a bit crazy, and then they got closed down later on. I can see that with the Fit team. I can see them eventually getting closed down. But with this was at a high level, the way that it was sanctioned at a high level, the way that they operated wasn't outside of the bounds of their brief. It was, as far as the police are concerned, I think it was a completely reasonable... It was a sanctioned thing that was going well, mm-hmm. as far as they were concerned. So I can't... being cynical here, I think the likelihood is that it gets officially disbanded, it goes away for a bit, goes quiet, and then it gets resurrected quietly under another name.
I suppose one of the things that's probably of more concern to the police is how it actually affected some of their individual officers, because they, mm-hmm. what is coming out is actually some of them went rogue, went native, and were unable to actually deal with returning to the police. So I anticipate that may be more of an issue to the police, that they have effectively put their own employees in danger and have created a situation which actually has destroyed their lives. I think the whole issue about having relationships with activists on the ground, and in one case having children with an activist on the ground, is obviously where the whole thing has gone too far. And it would be very interesting with the health and safety rules of the police if that's going to lead to a number of cases.
Well, yes, one of them was at some point talking about suing the police, wasn't he? Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how far that got. I imagine he'd have a case, but if you look at the army, you look at the amount of soldiers that have PTSD and mental health problems, and it's well known that the army doesn't care. I don't see how this will be any different. I'm sure it's completely predictable that they get messed up with the split, the split loyalties. I'm sure that it's known that will happen to them, and that it's just the price, isn't it? I don't think they care.
Well, it'll be an interesting campaigning point to argue back to the cops, because actually one of the explanations they give for the increasingly Terminator Robocop-style riot uniforms they wear is a health and safety concern. Yeah, here we have a situation where they're effectively destroying people's lives directly. So something we can throw back in their faces when they send in the Robocops.
Yeah, that's true. It's an interesting argument.
So basically... just maybe, do you want to tell us a little bit about what you're doing now? Because you're no longer in London.
No, I'm living in Glasgow now. Your listeners might have been able to hear my small child in the background. That's Jimmy having his first media exposure. I'm working for North Lanarkshire Council as a welfare rights officer, and I'm active campaigning against the bedroom tax.
Cool. So what's it like, having gone from the metropolis here to, not quite a smaller town compared to London, not quite a small town, but a smaller place?
Glasgow is not a small town. It's the largest city in Scotland. it's a more manageable sized city than London, and it's cheaper, and the people here have made me really welcome. So it's fun. The politics very different, obviously, because there's a referendum coming up. So that's been interesting to try and get my head around. That's Jimmy. Say hi to the people, Jimmy.
So just to wrap up then, what would you like to see coming over the next couple of years with so many years of activism and probably a good idea of what's worked, what hasn't worked, what's been achieved and what hasn't? What are your hopes for the next couple of years?
I'd like to see a lot of decent grassroots activism aimed at keeping hold of the welfare state. We've got some really tough years ahead of us. I love Johnny Void's work and everything that the benefits claimants are doing at the moment to fight back. And hopefully that will just run and run. Looking forward to all the meeting all the new people that will be radicalised by that. And don't be put off by this nonsense infiltration. This is what I want to tell to people as well, is that the vast majority of problems that you'll come across as an activist are caused by egos, people falling out with each other, bad planning, very normal, mundane things. That's what will cause you the majority of your problems. this kind of stuff, it's troubling, and in a way it's exciting and it makes you feel important to be troubled by it, but it's the just everyday normal problems of people being messed up that we really need to keep our eye on the most.
I suppose if we look back to the 1970s and the heyday of the Cold War, it was very, very likely that large organisations and human rights and environmental organisations were heavily, heavily infiltrated. There's a kind of apocryphal story goes around that at one point at least half of CND's main board were working for one security agency or another. So didn't destroy them, so we shouldn't let us destroy us.
Absolutely.
Okay, Eleanor, thanks a million. Thanks for joining us.
No problem.
I hope people enjoyed listening to it. So just before we finish up the show, this weather, I think a lot of us just feel like sitting down and sleeping, and maybe here's something we could wake up to. Here's KMFDM with Anarchy.
Gospel of rage, a faction.